Aloha, Tiki Files. Thanks for joining me for episode 17 of Marooned, a Texas Tiki podcast. Sorry for the hiatus, but, you know, life happens sometimes. Anyways, it's always great getting together with Russell, the big kahuna over at Lalo, and this time was no exception. However, this time, we also get to chat with the woman who keeps the ship running, Liz Thede, Russell's wife. In episode 13, I sat down with Russell to talk about the Lalo Landlubbers Rum Club, and we discussed the build-out process of getting Lalo opened up. While we were recording that episode, it got me thinking about what they do on a daily basis to keep the bar running efficiently, which is what we discussed in this episode, along with their participation in Beach Bum Berry's Sip and Santa pop-up. Jen and I had a chance to stop by Lalo this past Sunday, and I highly recommend you make it out there for some of these Beach Bum Berry original cocktails. Of course, there are other bars participating in this, but you should go check out Lalo. Now, while we were on a break, I managed to pick up a new sponsor. The guests of episode 11, Tiki Problems, makers of the popular Mai Tai and Punch Ingredient t-shirts. So once you're done listening to this episode, go check out episode 11 for more info on Tiki Problems, and when you're done with that, head over to tikiproblems.com to pick up their Mai Tai and Punch t-shirts. Alright, you've got your homework. Two episodes of Marooned, and buying a t-shirt from Tiki Problems. Now, I've been really into Planner's Punches lately, so let's call that the cocktail of the episode. So hit pause real quick, shake up a Planner's Punch, sit back, relax, and enjoy. Episode 17 of Marooned, a Texas Tiki Podcast. Filling up with content all the time.
Yeah.
That's why I love doing it.
I hear there's a lot of people listening.
Yeah, we've got some good listeners. I haven't done one in a while.
Oh, really?
Been a couple months. I've been busy with work and school. Mm-hmm. And planning.
Yeah, oh, when are y'all getting married?
March.
Oh, wow, it's coming.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've been busy with that stuff. So, been taking it easy, but
yeah.
I have a December episode out, so.
Yeah. Cool.
But thank you guys for taking the time to sit down. Sitting here with the Thedes, the masterminds behind Lalo in Houston, Texas, for the third Lalo edition of Marooned. So thank you guys.
Cool. Are we live right now?
Yeah, we're going.
All right.
All right.
Sweet.
So good night yesterday, looks like.
Yeah.
Great weekend.
Yeah. Man, this whole week has been killer. Every night's been busy. It's been like Friday night.
Holiday
day.
Week.
Yeah, holiday weekend, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanksgiving weekend, I'm sure,
yeah.
Is always going to be huge.
Yeah.
People don't want to go shopping. They want to come drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, the Heights has become such a showcase neighborhood, you know. That's like, there's so many new people moving in all the time, you know. They're probably having their first Thanksgivings in their new houses. And
yeah.
So.
Well, and that's one thing that I always enjoy people watching and, you know, listening to what people are talking about as we're sitting at the bar, and it's astounding that you guys have been here 4 years now. We just celebrated
almost five.
Yeah. We're coming up on the fifth year anniversary.
Yeah, in February.
That's right.
In March.
So
yeah, right before your wedding.
Yeah. So I mean, it's going on 5 years, and I still hear people saying, "Oh yeah, I've never been here before,"
yeah.
Or "I just heard about
yeah.
this place." I'm like,
yeah.
I mean, I know Houston's huge, but it's cool that it's still constantly growing. I mean, people are still coming out of the woodworks to come over here.
That's, you know, that's really the, man, that's like the city of Houston. It's just exploding. You know, there's people here from everywhere. We used to, a few years ago, we used to kind of joke like, oh, no one's from Houston anymore. And really no one is, you know. It's hard to find people that like grew up here.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's here for business or they moved here. You know, for whatever reason, because the weather's nice, you know? So, man, in this neighborhood has, I mean, it's just blown up. So, that's kind of part of it.
We're lucky.
But, you know, we don't do a ton of advertising, and we do that on purpose, you know? So, probably is a lot of new people.
It's always word of mouth.
Yeah.
And I tell everybody anytime I can.
Yeah.
people who are into tiki who've never been, they're visiting Houston. I mean, I all over Reddit. I don't know if you get on Reddit, but
no,
there's people are always asking, I'm going to Houston. Where am I going? Where should I go? And there was just one a couple weeks ago. Should I go to Kanaloa or should I go to Lalo? I'm like, I mean, both if you have the time, but if you're only going to one, Lalo, like that's the original Houston tiki bar at this point. Why would you not go there? Why would you go to Kanaloa?
Yeah. I think you should go to both.
Yeah, that's why I say if you have time, go to both. Yeah. And now there's just the two since Howie's shut down. So pour one out for them.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's great to see you guys persevering. Even just a couple of years ago, it felt like there was a huge resurgence in tiki, and it's like even bigger now. It's just constantly growing, especially when you have the Sip and Santa. You have events that are going constantly. Yeah. They're doing another Tiki Oasis in Arizona now. They're expanding everything.
Hotel looks amazing.
Yeah, that hotel looks really awesome. There's a lot of really nice hotels in Arizona.
Yes, Arizona's great.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just huge, and it's still growing. But what's cool about Lalo is you come in, and like last night, when we got here, it was the Tiki people. It was all the Texas Tiki Files. They're here as soon as you guys open.
Yeah. First thing, always.
Yeah. Lining up. Jen was...
Got to get the glassware, yeah.
Yeah, Jen was joking, we should go camp out. That's our Black
there
Friday.
There was some people here. Right? Yeah, there was some people here before we opened the door.
What was that?
Our anniversary.
Our anniversaries, they had a tailgate party.
Oh, yeah.
They had breakfast tacos. We
drove by before we came over here, and we were like, I see Brian's bright red hair from the street.
Yes.
Yeah. No, they were out there.
No pressure.
It was like noon. You know, we opened at 2, and we were all kind of like, oh, shit. Like, really? And they're like, no, we're going to tailgate. Okay.
Like, cool, whatever.
Sure.
But that's what I'm saying. So you come, you see the opening crowd, it's the Tiki people. Yeah. We came at 10:30, I'm like, who are all these people? Like, I would never expect to see any of these people in a Tiki bar.
Yeah.
So it's cool that it's not just appealing to the tiki crowd. It's appealing to everybody.
Right. Well, yeah, that sign outside says locals only. And that's really what, you know, we get a lot of local people, you know. David has a lot of friends, man. He's at that age where everybody knows him.
He talks a lot.
Still has a lot.
So he's got a lot of friends from the neighborhood that come,
For long. I mean, he's got a kid, so not
where else are you going to go, you know? Like, I feel like we're, you know, at this point, we're another, you know, if you're going to go out and you're going to bar hop, you know, you're like, we're going to go here, you know, especially if you've got friends in town, you know, you're like, we got to stop here, you know, we're just lucky that we're one of those stops, you know. And then I think people, you know, they get one drink in them, they stick around a little bit, you know, because the drinks are good.
Well, and we were here earlier this month, there was a guy who was sitting at the bar. He was just looking around for like 10 minutes, just trying to
take it all in.
Yeah.
And when he finally sat down, you had talked to him, and you're like, he didn't know what to order. He was looking at a menu. You could tell he was overwhelmed. And, you know, you suggested, well, what do you like? So you went with the Planner's Punch. That guy, like, guzzled down 3 or 4 Planner's Punches here.
Yeah. I made him another one, too, that was, like, off the menu.
Yeah, but it's things like that. It's that hospitality. It's, you know, there is something here for everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's your first time, there's a drink here for anybody. Yeah. So we'll find you what you're going to like. You just happened to hit it out of the park on the first one because you loved those Planner's Punches.
Yeah.
So it's cool. And then last night when we got here for the second round, there are these people like staring at the front. They were leaving. They're like, what is the name of this place? Trying to figure it out. They're like, is that Sip and Santa? It's not rum. And it's like, well, it's right there in the corner. It's Lalo. Yeah. So, yeah. And you could tell those people who come here regularly had brought some friends who had never been here. They were taking pictures out front because it's such a cool display, especially with the Sip and Santa stuff out there.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
Yeah.
Turned out pretty cute.
Yeah.
She did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun place, you know?
It's very enjoyable. That's why we come so often.
Yeah.
But really, the reason for this episode is every time we do an episode, I come up with an idea while we're recording.
Uh-huh.
So last time we were talking about the build-out process, what it took to get Lalo up and running. While we were talking about that, I'm like, well, how do they keep it running on a day-to-day basis? You know, prepping. Most of the drinks start with lime. Like, how do you keep these things going? How do you prepare for a full day's work to keep all this stuff available, stock ready to go? So that's what I really want to talk to you guys about.
Cool.
You guys do the prep. You guys set everything up. You guys are making the syrups and everything fresh. So take us through
that. I take the trash out. She does all that. You know, I do the boot, like the keep up with the booze ordering and stuff like that. But no, Elizabeth is, you know, there's no way we would have been able to do this if I didn't have her, you know, kitchen experience and everything else. So she's really the one that keeps the boat, you know, keeps the motor going.
And I'm definitely not a bartender. So.
But you're a master syrup maker.
Yes. Yes,
so
I am.
So how did you get into that part? Or?
Well, I mean, it was the plan from the beginning that he would run the creative part in terms of the menu and bartending and run the staff, and that I would be able to run the daytime, because we knew it would be a full-time job. So I was prepared going in, made all the plans. We did the recipes, of course, together, and then I just made a recipe book, and we've been doing it full-time. I mean, I'm here yesterday, like for a special day like that. I'll get here as early as 8 o'clock to get things done, because we opened at 2 yesterday.
Yeah.
But on a typical day, I'll get here anywhere between 9 and 10. I mean, I'm here, definitely here by 10, doing it to open by 4.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this past year, I actually finally got a full-time person in here that helps me during the day, which is really great. I don't know if you've met her, Angela.
I don't think so.
No?
I think I saw her here yesterday.
Yeah, she was here early yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's really made my life great over the last year. So I'm not doing it all by myself, and Russell's not having to rush to help me during the day and try to do it at night too sometimes. And so it's gotten easier, but it is still a full-time job. It's, you know, it's shopping. It's, you know, because everything is fresh juiced, and it's cases upon cases being brought in throughout the week because we're so small. There's not storage here.
Yeah.
We're shopping several times a week. You know, we're making the syrup several times a week because of the storage. We can't make huge bulk items, except, you know, there's a few things like I'll make, you know, how much orgeat do I make at a time?
That's a lot.
18 liters or something, you know.
Wow.
So there's some things I will make massive amounts of that we just fly through. But most of it, it's constantly rotating. It's constantly going through, remaking.
Yeah, you know, most cocktail bars, or a lot of cocktail bars, they'll have like, you know, if they have a menu of, say, 30 drinks, you know, 4 or 5 of them will be real juice heavy, you know, and the rest of them will be like stir drinks or whatever, you know. Man, Tiki Bar, man, every single one of our drinks has at least one juice,
yeah,
you know. Some of them have 4 or 5 juices, you know, along with 2 syrups and 2 liqueurs, you know, and she makes the liqueur, she makes like the Falernum, she makes concentrates, like we have a Singapore Sling concentrate that we make. Mm-hmm. I mean, she makes all kinds of stuff, you know, and that's one of the reasons that we can serve drinks so quickly is all of that prep beforehand. It's so important. You
some
know?
Of the drinks are pre-blended too, like the hot drinks are pre-bottled and they're just pouring, say, 1.5 ounces in with the coffee and adding the whip. So there's not just syrups and juices that we're making every day, but we have a, you know, a row of 18 bottles we're looking at, you know, mixes we're filling and things like that. That's a lot.
Yeah, so
to serve on that level, like on a busy day.
Well, yeah,
like
that. I mean, at that volume, as fast mm-hmm. as you guys are turning out drinks, that's insane. Because, I mean, you must be just burning through every syrup, all the Falernum, all the Orgeat, all the Simple, all the...
It's been a learning curve throughout the years, for sure. I mean, we don't run out of things anymore, but in the beginning, or with the growing pains, we did a little bit here and there. But, you know, we stay on top of it. It's just a lot of work.
So I guess that leads to the question, how much of the preparation is involved in terms of putting out, like, a new menu? So do you go through each drink and say we can use this syrup in maybe 5 drinks? So
there's a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have things that we have to have, you know, just because we don't want to disappoint anybody.
Well, so there's the obvious ones. We always have orgeat, grenadine, Don's mix,
but
cinnamon
things like
syrup.
Vanilla syrup,
but yeah,
that we don't
right.
really put
yeah.
in anything.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have that just in case someone orders, you know, a Don the Beachcomber drink that requires vanilla syrup, you know, and they could be coming from out of town and they show up and they're like, I want a Nui Nui. Well, you know, I think it's important that we know how to make it.
Yeah. We don't even have white simple syrup in a drink, but we always, of course, have that on hand to make
you
mojitos
never know when
or
you're
whatever.
Need it.
Yeah. So, you know, we have a good selection of stuff that we already have to choose from. And so we try to stick to those things, you know, as far as making new drinks and stuff. But, you know, it really just depends on the creative part of it, you know, which I guess is my department. I just kind of let it happen organically, and things start to kind of mesh that way, you know.
A good example of the question he's asking, too, would be what we did with Sip and Santa. We were thinking about a fall menu when we were asked to do Sip and Santa, and we were like, oh, this is perfect. So we held off just a little bit longer than we wanted to put out a new menu and realized, oh, we have cranberry syrup in this. We have chai syrup in this. So we sort of, if you'll notice, our new menu has those syrups integrated into it.
Yeah, because I mean,
for the month of December, that'll just make our lives a little bit. Yeah, it's still four more syrups, but it's, you know, in addition to our 16 or whatever. Yeah, they will be used now.
So I mean, and it goes back to that, like you're saying, with the vanilla syrup. I mean, who knows how often that bottle's getting picked up to make that? So I mean, at least this way, with these new syrups, you can utilize them in the new drinks and then the new menu, of course. Which the new drinks were great. That swizzle, I think, was probably my favorite.
Yeah, man, it's really awesome. It's so incredible. We're serving, we're allowed to really serve Beach Bum Berry drinks.
he's been geeking out about it since we got invited. Just, it's super exciting.
So cool, you know.
It's a
like
huge
he helped or he designed everything, you know, and like, you know, it's big.
And he picked the bars.
Yeah.
So he knows Lalo.
Yeah.
Lalo is on his radar enough so much that he thinks you guys would be a great representation of his name. So, I mean, that's huge. I mean, without him, we wouldn't have these recipes.
No.
Exactly.
No.
I mean, that's just.
But yeah, those drinks are all really awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's a lot of work. There's a lot that goes into it, you know. You should see the amount of pineapples we go through each week.
I can't even imagine the amount of limes you're going through each week.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot, you know.
Six cases.
We're very in tuned with, you know, the Mutual Con lime farmers indirectly, you know. Like, we know when it rained there, you know. We know, like, oh, man, this is coming from a different place. Like, oh, there's a hurricane, you know. Well,
the price
during hurricane
is gonna
go season,
up,
you know, it's like a hurricane will go through that part of the Pacific or whatever. And it's like, oh, man, we better buy up, you know, 4 cases of limes just to make sure, you know, because, man, getting those little bitty ones like the fresh crop limes, they're so hard to juice.
Yeah.
You know,
there's nothing out of
them. Oh, yeah, you get nothing out of them. And, man, we're making 4 gallons of juice, you know, man, it takes so many of them.
So do you have goals daily as far as your juice goes?
Every day has a different par.
Yeah, we actually have a par sheet that we can, if I'm not here, to say set that person up for the day that they can look at, and there's pars to make.
Yeah.
And are you just juicing at the beginning of the day or throughout you're keeping it up?
It's just the hope is just in the beginning of the day.
There's
calculated.
No prep during service is what we try to do.
Okay. Yeah, that we don't want to take someone away from their job to do that, you know. Plus, it's just so much more control in the environment in the morning, you know, than them trying to juice in the middle of the shift, you know, and scrambling. You know, we can take our time. We can make sure everything's right.
Organized.
You know.
First in, first out. Things are
there are
around.
Things that they do, though, you know. So.
David will do some.
Yeah.
Like those bottles, those pre-mixes, if they run out of, like we have the Hamden Estate syrup right now, which is, we're using the cranberry syrup and grenadine and some other things. And so if he runs out of that, they have a book that they can look in. And
yeah, like liqueurs they have to make sometimes. Of course, like garnishes, they have to cut more fruit and stuff like that. But we
That's
try to make sure that they don't make any syrups, you know.
They don't never juice.
They never have to juice. Yeah, we do math, man.
All that math. It is. It is a game.
Yeah. No, I do all the math, you know. We analyze sales. You know, and see how many drinks, you know. We have certain specials on certain days that we need more juice for those. Like Mai Tai Tuesday, we need more lime juice than we normally would
Tuesday. Well, Sip and Santa uses in a lot of lemon. So we're having to make a lot more lemon.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, you just sit around and tool away with a little bit of math and try to figure it out.
See, and that's interesting in experience going somewhere like Golden Tiki in Vegas. I mean, the place itself is huge, so they're always running with a huge staff. But, I mean, in the middle of the day, you'll see one of the bar backs running out with the big hand-pressed juicer to, you know, juice lime.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're also open 24 hours. So
yeah. I mean, I can't imagine.
So, I mean, you'll see intermittently that there's people running around making fresh juices. So I think it's cool that you guys have gotten it down to a science. Like you say, per day, you know what you're going to need because for certain days, this is what sells well, or this is the special for that day, so we need extra of lime.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we'll have a little bit left over. You know, there's in the craft cocktail world, a lot of people believe that juice deteriorates very quickly, you know, and starts to change. And, you know, that's probably true. There's probably some good science behind it or whatever, but we can't afford to do that. You know, we make so much juice just because we had a slower night. You know, we can't afford to just pour it all down the drain. So, I mean, it's important that we make sure we have just enough,
the right amount,
you know, because if we have too much left over, you know, and that's what me and Elizabeth, we communicate, like, oh, this week's been kind of slow. Let's, you know, let's make sure we cut back on this and cut back on that, you know. So there's always adjusting, you know, every day we adjust. So it's a lot of work. That's why people always ask, like, oh, you're never there. Well, you're wrong.
You don't see me.
Actually, I'm here 7 days a week.
You're wrong about that. There's a whole day before we even open that goes down.
Well, and I guess that's what makes it so beneficial to y'all that you open later in the day throughout the week. I mean, there's no way you could do that sort of prep and open at noon.
Man,
In the beginning, we did on the weekends.
We opened at 2 on Saturday.
And noon on Sunday?
Noon on Sunday.
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah,
after Saturday night, it was, oh my God. I would get here when the sun was coming up to make it work. It was really hard.
Yeah. We didn't have 5 years of experience either.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we didn't know.
And not as
we
many
doing,
staff members,
you know?
So we were still, you know, working when we opened a lot. We were bar backing and bartending at the beginning.
Yeah, we would open at 2, and then me and her would bartend with no bar back until 6. And that's when everybody started showing up, was 6, right? Because
it was hard.
It was really busy for us at the time. You know, we were still learning and still kind of adjusting things, you know. And so we wanted all the professional bartenders, you know, to be here at night because that's
the
bulk of our
up,
business. But people started to figure out, like, if they came at night, it could be super busy. And so in the beginning, we'd get just killed right at the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
And some days, you know, we would get killed and then it wouldn't happen later. And we'd just be like, oh, man, like, what, you know? Like, they're, like, standing around and, like, twiddling their thumbs trying to figure out what to do. And we were, like, getting our butts kicked, you know.
So but, I guess, was there any backlash when you decided to open up later in the day when you just made that
change? A little
change?
Bit. Just a little at first.
You know, there's
but
always
it really
somebody
wasn't.
On the
there's
internet.
Always
somebody,
yeah,
somebody
just
on the internet.
Just one or two
day,
people.
You know, makes a stupid comment, but not really. You know, who needs to drink at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? No, you know, tiki drinks at 2 in the afternoon. You know, it's... I know, but...
When we fly into Vegas,
on your
it's
day
like
off.
9 or 10 a.m. and
Vegas
we're
is an
cranky.
All-day thing.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
That's why Vegas it's busier is, on the weekends early.
Yeah. Or during the day, or the event days that people are here at 2.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, you know.
People need
or
their
camping.
Fix, man.
Camping.
Tailgating.
You know? Yeah.
Tailgating.
Camping, you can start at 10.
Yeah, exactly.
As soon as you wake up with camping.
Well, yeah. And I mean, usually that's just beer. So, I mean, you're good. I keep the whiskey till the end of the night when you're hanging out around the campfire.
That's right. That's right.
So, but yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's a lot of work. In terms of the syrups or recipes that you're using, is that stuff you guys have just tweaked? Did you find a recipe and just make it to your own liking?
You know, we played with some recipes. You know, once you know how to make a syrup, there's fundamental things to a syrup. So you can, like, just kind of sub ingredients in syrups and stuff. But, like, our grenadine recipe, which is top secret, is
of
kind
course,
of a...
We're not going to be unveiling any secrets here.
Is sort of a tweaked recipe that I learned at a different bar when I was a younger bartender. We made our own grenadine. It was the first time I ever did that. And so I took that recipe with me per se, you know. They like, we'd like to say inspired by, you know. But, you know, it's changed a little bit. You know, there's different things about it. But, you know, so it's things like that, you know. And then we will make something completely from scratch and just kind of come with ideas. You know, we try to think about...
there have been things that haven't worked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's plenty of stuff.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's always going to be trial and error. And especially when you're... Because I guess that's the thing with, as far as tiki drinks go. You can follow a recipe, but how do you tweak it just slightly so that it's your recipe? Or that it tastes different from what you'd get going to any other bar who's following the standard Trader Vic's 44 Mai Tai recipe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's got to be something with your orgeat, perhaps, or your simple, things like that. And that's, I guess, the benefit of making your own stuff versus some of these places who are just... All their syrups are B.G. Reynolds, and that's it. So everybody's just going to taste the same as everywhere else that uses those ingredients.
Sure.
So,
and those are good ingredients, you know?
Yeah, they're quality stuff. But there's just something, I don't know, I think maybe, it of course, it's just in my head, but I think the drink always tastes better when you've made the ingredients yourself.
I totally agree with that.
Well, and then we can, and that's, man, we're very controlling, and so... Like, man, I pluck the leaves off the pineapples at the store, you know, and pick the right pineapples, you know, and so, you know, we like to...
Yeah, we actually, that's something interesting. We don't order produce from...
We actually go and pick it.
Yeah, okay. We actually like, go and pick it up at Restaurant Depot so that we can actually search through the things. Because when you order it and it shows up, you really just, you have to accept it. It's not...
That's, so this new trend of grocery delivery or just going and picking up your groceries... I'm thinking, like, I don't want some random 16-year-old kid who's just grabbing the first thing off the shelf or off the produce. I want to go pick the produce myself.
I've tried it, and it is like that. And they'll make weird substitutions, and you're like, nah.
Exactly. Like, I don't want the lime that's all brown and yellow on the outside. Like, it's just, And they're not going to, they don't give a shit. They're not going to care. They're just, I need four limes for this order. Great. Here's four limes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome. Because, I mean, me not having a restaurant or bar background, I would just imagine you're having a supplier come by and bring the stuff. So that's really cool that you guys are going out there.
You know, man, really, some of the key to our success is our location here. And this just happened to be our neighborhood, and we wanted to open a bar in our neighborhood, you know. But we're very close. There's a farmer's market that's just a few blocks this way. That is just full of produce, you know. And then there's a restaurant supply store, Restaurant Depot, that's actually, we moved, and it's on the way to from our house. And so we're really lucky that we can just kind of go and pick what we want, you know.
If they don't have it over there,
we can go
to the farmer's
over here, you know, and get it.
Maybe
you know,
spend a little bit more, but we'll get what we want.
You know. And so... yeah, man, and that farmer's market it's a lot of like Hispanic foods, and so that's kind of a little bit of our style too. So that helped, you know, because we're Texan, we have, you know, fresh chilies over here, and we have papayas, you know, and we have all these things that we really want to use, you know, and it's just right here, you know, we can run over there. There's a spice store over there that has fresh spices that are, you know, in bins. That you can go in there and just load up on incredible fresh spices, and they have Himalayan sea salt, and I mean they have all kinds of stuff over there that, you know, is right there. Mexican vanilla, you know, molasses. They have just everything.
Dried fruit, candy.
Cinnamon sticks that are 3 feet long, you know, like just really like one of the keys to our freshness and our success, you know.
So have you ever come across anything at these Mexican markets or farmers markets that you see that you're like, this doesn't go in tiki, but we should probably try this?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's a lot of rules, but, you know, that's what's good about tiki is it's up to interpretation, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, and, man, I've only worked as a bartender. I've only worked in Houston, you know, and I've never worked at a tiki bar. You know what I'm saying? This is my first tiki bar. So, I make drinks like a Houstonian makes drinks. I just happen to, my style is tiki. So, I've taken everything I've learned from being here in Houston and knowing what people like here, And I apply that to tiki. And so, I mean, that is my style, is to kind of take elements of Texas and try to pack it in, you know.
And I guess, is that where you get, like, your mezcal drinks and those kind of flavors from?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I try to stay above on trend, you know. And sometimes I'll be, not to, like, say I'm, like, whatever. Sometimes we'll be making a drink, you know, and I'll just be doing whatever. And then all of a sudden it starts popping up, which it could just be targeted ads to me, you know, because they're listening. But all of a sudden, Amazon's, you know, we'll see, listening. Right? All of a sudden we'll see something in a book and be like, man, we're like right on, you know, right on point. But, you know, yeah, it's a lot of stuff. We just try to do the best that we can with everything that we have around here, you know, and it seems to work and people seem to respond to it. So
yeah, people love it.
Like I always say,
that's why we come up from San Antonio so often, because we like coming here. You guys are doing everything top notch. Cool. That's why I support you guys and hype you guys every opportunity that I can, because I love you. Both of you guys, I like you both as people. I love the bar. I love the staff. Like, it's awesome. This is our home away from home.
Cool.
And that was in the first episode. I don't know if you recall. That was one of the things that I had brought up, is the fact that you've managed to maintain largely the same staff. 99% of the tiki bars you go to, you go in once. The next time you go in, they'll probably have an entirely new staff, because there's just so much turnover.
Yeah.
And that's part of what makes Lalo so great. You come in, you know you're going to see David, you're going to see Bella, Caitlin. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have those, to have that continuity.
Yeah,
consistency. We're really lucky.
Consistency, quality, and consistency are my two words.
And
my
people
two
who
bar
actually
buzzwords.
Give a shit about the drinks they're making, they want to make the best drink they can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge part of it.
Right. Yeah. You know, and that's kind of part, you know, a lot of creativity. I try to get them involved too, because they're going to be proud of what they made, you know, sometimes more so than what we made, you know. So they like to get involved, and they like, you know, we try to get feedback from them and everything. You know, it's definitely a group effort, you know. We've probably talked about it before, but I talk about in training and stuff that we're a pirate ship, you know, and everybody kind of laughs at me. But there's so much to that, you know, like we're all kind of like in tune with each other, you know, and it's really, it just works. It's taken a long time to get here, you know, and it takes a lot of trust.
Yeah.
You know, you got to trust people.
How do you leave your bar in somebody else's hands and know that you're going to come back and it's still going to be here? It's
well, gonna you burn tell down. Yourself that over and over. That
it's
gonna
never
be
easy
okay.
Yet.
Yeah. Or turning over the keys to somebody like, hey, lock up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
I would say every moment that the bar's open, we have that, you know, it's always there.
in the back of your head.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, why should we just drive by?
Yeah.
It's one of those
things.
Well,
we watch the camera.
Should we call the babysitter to check on the kids every 5 minutes? No.
We do, but we can because of cameras and because of our POS. You know, you can get on the back end and see what we're selling at any moment. And so we're always looking.
Well, I mean, it's your baby. It's your investment. This is
our
your
lives.
Living. Yeah, this is your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's completely understandable. But, like I said, I can't imagine the amount of trust you have to have in somebody. And I'm like I said, you've got great people that you can trust. So
yeah, you know, that's probably, you know, besides their attitude, you know, attitude is probably the most important thing. But that's something, man, in hiring is trying to find people that seem trustworthy. You know, sometimes you just got to fill a position. But, you know, that's
and
all
I would
the,
say that attitude
preparation.
And all of that is more important to you, too, than their skill level.
Yeah.
You can always work on that, but you can't fix...
Yeah, you can always train them and help them get to where you need
them to
be.
Teach them how
to
do stuff, you know, which is a constant thing, you know, but their attitude
but
and,
yeah,
like,
you've
just...
you got a piss poor attitude, then.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah.
Let's not even waste all our time trying to get you there, because your attitude's not going to change.
They can also... You know, all it takes is one bad attitude, you know, one bad pirate to start a mutiny.
Yeah.
You know, and they start talking, you know, amongst each other, and you got somebody with an attitude that, you know, often with bartenders, they always think they know better than you do. you know, they're like superstars.
I think that's in life. Somebody always thinks they know better than you.
Yeah, and so often you'll get like a bartender that has kind of a cocky attitude that, you know, oh, we should be doing it this way, or oh, this drink doesn't taste right, you know.
Or my way's better.
Yeah.
I like the way I make this drink better.
And they'll kind of poison it, you know, and poison the team. You know, and you'll have like daily mutinies, you know, where everyone, they lose their attitude and everybody's like, oh, I'm tired of being here. You know, especially if like.
One bad mood can, you know.
Yeah, you know,
especially when everyone's
night,
close,
you
like
know,
that.
Everyone starts, you know, in tuning with the energy, you know, and then you want to, you know.
And you keep the vibe right when they're coming in, get them hyped up, get them ready to go. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just, I understand you may be in a funky mood. Let's see if we can change that real quick before we start. Like,
well, so I have a tactic. And I mean, it's not really a tactic, but it's part of my management style. I tell them that when they come here, that they're superstars, you know, like when you're out there in the real world, you know, you're just David Perez. But when you come to Lalo, you know, you're David from Lalo, you know, and people know your name and people are coming here to see you, you know, and they say things like, this is the best drink I've ever had. You know, like that's huge.
Yeah.
Like the best drink you've ever had. What responsibility, but like that's a big thing, you know? And so when you come here, like you can shed all that. You can shed that negativity. You can shed whatever political things you're trying to forget about. You can shed
family problems.
Yeah. So you come here and you can be part of a team.
And you know what? That's a perfect thing to say. You're a superstar. When people come here, it's like they're coming to a concert. They're coming for a show. They want to see you.
Yeah.
They're coming for you.
It's like a play.
Yeah.
We're putting on a show.
Exactly.
You know. And
being in a band. They want to see the band. They want to see the bartenders. That's why I love sitting at the bar watching them. I would never want to attempt being a professional bartender. It just seems like there's way too much into it. But I love making drinks at home. Yeah, exactly.
It takes a special set of skills. That's
for sure. And that's why I love watching them, seeing what they do, their techniques, what they're doing, how they're doing things.
Yeah.
So I can adapt that to at home, just so I can, you know, because these are the people that I would love to aspire to be if I was going to go work at a bar.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the perfect thing. You're a superstar. When you're in the bar, you're a superstar. You're David, you're Caitlin, you're Bella, you're Ben from Lalo.
I mean, there's more people that come here. You know, I started realizing that when I was a young bartender. Like, there's more people that come to my bar and know my name than, you know, I have friends out there in the real world.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's more people that come here and recognize me and see me at the grocery store and, like, say hello, you know? And it's like, man.
You're signing autographs.
Yeah.
Kissing like, babies, shaking hands.
You know, and for the longest time.
If he's wearing
an
Aloha shirt, we just can't go anywhere.
Oh, yeah. For the longest time, you know, that, like, you know, you have mixed feelings about things. It's like, man, I don't want people to see me, you know, out in the real world. I might disappoint them or whatever, you know, and like kind of feel a certain way. But, you know, I started to make it started to feel good. You know, it's like, man, these people know who I am just because I was their waiter, you know, and like,
well, but you must
it's
have
such
done
an important
something.
Part of their life. Like, you know, eating and dining and going out.
Hospitality.
And, man, they're giving us their money, you know, and like they worked real hard. Man, and nowadays, back in the day, it just used to be people with money that, you know, would go out to eat. But nowadays it's everybody, you know, and like that's something that Trader Vic's, you know, in his biography talks about how important it was to see people during the Great Depression come to his uncle's restaurant and spend their money when they didn't have to, you know?
Or when they really didn't have any.
Right,
but they were choosing to, that's what they were choosing to use it on.
And so, I mean, all of that is just so much of bartending, you know? It's almost like, it's just elements of it, you know, that you have to think about, you know? And you have to apply it to everything and make other people think about it, you know? If they just think that they're coming just to, you know, see them and stuff like that, you know, they could get a big head or whatever, but, you know, it's important that everyone comes here with the right mentality and the right attitude, you know, because that'll make you break us, you know, because it's people that people remember.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. And like you said, when somebody tells you that you've just made them the best drink they've ever had, that's a huge responsibility. You have to keep that up. I mean,
they're exaggerating,
well,
you know, but
maybe they're not.
Yeah.
But you don't know, you don't know what, where they're coming right? from or what kind of shitty drinks they've been having.
That's true. Like,
hey, they may have been drinking pink Mai Tais for the last 20 years thinking that was the right way to do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you never know. It very well could be. Maybe it's not everybody, but I bet you there's more than you would think that that actually is the best drink they've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah. It just means that they're having a good time. And exactly. That's what's important, you know, that they forget about, you know, they escape. That's what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think we do a pretty good job pulling it off.
You do a damn good job. So about that fashionola recipe, I'm just kidding.
I was about to say, what?
I just had to sneak that in there. So I guess back to all the our ingredient talk. So are you doing 1-to-1 ratios for syrups, 2-to-1?
Everything's different.
Everything's different.
It depends on, you know, the drink. I think the origin is like 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we sugar adds complexity. It adds mouthfeel. And so adjusting the amount of sugar changes the drink drastically. So it's really important. Some drinks we want, if it's got, you know, this much juice in it, we want a little more, a lengthier syrup. In other drinks, we want a punchier syrup that's not going to take over as much. You know, or depending on, like, the ingredients, you know, if it's like a chai syrup, sometimes the chai can be so strong that we need to double up the sugar just to make sure that the chai isn't too bitter, you know, once it's made. And so it really just depends on the syrup, you know. Like, again, that's where we come in and we taste stuff and we try it over and over and over, you know, and perfect it, or at least get it as close to perfection as we can.
So I guess as far as consistency goes, is it just once you come up with a recipe you like, just sticking to it? And that's what you're going to do? Or have you tweaked anything? Like, maybe the orgeat you're making now isn't exactly like how it was when you started. Have you done anything like that? Or have you
I would say the orgeat's the exact same.
You know, so what we probably... we will make a whole new syrup. Like, if we think something needs to be different, you know, we'll come up with a whole different kind of concept for it. I.e., when we first started, we only made that fascinola, you know, and it has mango in it, and the mango is fairly strong, you know, and when we started experimenting with other drinks that called for fascinola or originally would have just been passion fruit, you know, it started to overpower things. And so instead of tweaking the fascinola, we started making passion fruit syrup from scratch. In order to, you know, fix that. And so now we have fascinola that we use when we want a heavier fruit syrup. And then we have kind of a lighter, more zingy passion fruit syrup that we make in order to make sure the drinks are right. You know, so we usually make something different, you know, and to try to fix that. But yeah, like I said, there's always adjustments, you know.
Have you found maybe a batch will be different because of the ingredients you're using? Like maybe a sometimes, different kind of cinnamon that you couldn't get what you normally use?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, produce is...
It changes.
Remember how tricky tapache was when we were making tapache?
Oh, yeah. We used to make tapache with our scrap pineapple.
And some of them would just gelatinize depending on the pineapple that you got. Some of them would work and some of them wouldn't. So
yeah, it was really
inconsistent. That was strange, yeah.
Pineapples are probably... Are
super
inconsistent. They're so inconsistent, you know. That's one of the things I believe that Costa Rican pineapples are the best, and so I always try to look for the boxes that are from Costa Rica. But of course, we get a lot from Mexico, you know. And man, it just depends on the weather. It depends on how much rainfall they have. It depends on what part of the field they're in at the time, you know, because these fields are giant, you know, and so. Man, pineapples are really inconsistent. So we have tricks to make things consistent, you know. You know, it's always adjusting. But, yeah.
Well, and then you have different ingredients, like what's the syrup that you use in the piña colada and the
tiki butter?
Barefoot, yeah.
Well, oh, the tiki butter. Yeah.
Tiki
butter,
so, how did you guys come up with the tiki butter?
So that's actually a recipe that we found in a book. It's like one of those like 1990s 1000 drink recipe okay. kind of books, yeah. you know. It was like 1000 rum drinks, you know. I collect, one of the things that got me into tiki, I collect cocktail books. So I go through Amazon, or at the time back in the day, I used to go through like BarnesandNobles.com, and you could find books that are like a buck, you know. And so I would buy any cocktail book. It didn't even matter. And like most of them are just full of crap, yeah. you know. But we found this recipe, and that was the hot butter rum batter for a drink at a Chinese restaurant in Burbank, California or something. And like I said, it was in a book that was like 1,000 rum drinks. And man, I read cocktail books. I'm dyslexic, so I don't really read like regular books, but I love to read. So I read like how-to books, you know, it's little short things. It doesn't frustrate me. So cocktail books, man, I will sit and read a cocktail book and like it makes sense to me. There's numbers, you know, and I can like almost instantly like memorize the stuff. And I found that recipe and we played with it, and it was ice cream. It was the craziest thing. But it was, like I said, it was a drink from the 90s, you know, when we made drinks with ice cream, you know. And so we just kind of took that recipe and kind of built on it, and then adapted it to blended drinks. Because if you read all the Beach Bum Berry books and it talks about the honey mix, there's a lot of having to leave it out, mm-hmm. you know, and make sure that it's mixes and make sure it's stabilized and make sure, you know, that it's at room temperature, because if you put it in a blender cold, it'll get gummy in there and it'll, you know, break up.
Interesting.
Into little pieces, yeah. you know, little butter pieces, almost like a biscuit. And so we didn't want that. That was something that we didn't want to happen in our drinks, you know. And then I have these crazy, I hate milk. I don't hate milk personally. Like, milk's
it
good.
It never did anything to you.
Right. But, you know, most of my experience is at brunch. And we have a lot of milk at brunch. And when you drop a milk, like a milk jug, and it goes everywhere, it's insane. Right? And then if you have milk in a drink that you have to measure, you'll never get the milk out of your tools. And so you rinse your jigger, you got, like, milk in your jigger. You got milk in your water. You got milk on your spoon. You got milk in your shaker. You got milk everywhere. God forbid you knock a drink over, and then you got milk all over your station. It's insane, right? Obviously, I've had some bad experiences with milk.
He does hate milk personally.
And so when we opened this, you know, I was like, we're not going to have milk here. You know, like, we can't do things with milk. Even if something calls for, like, heavy cream, like a piña colada, you know, I don't want milk because it kills service. All of a sudden, you have to recover from, like, vitamin D milk fat. You know what I'm saying? And it's just awful. And in order for the boat to keep going straight, we got to make sure that we don't have these kind of mishaps, you know? And so taking an ice cream recipe that was mixed with butter was a way that we could have both milk and a butter mixture and be able to use it kind of simultaneously, you know. So instead of adding 2 ounces of heavy cream to something, we can add like a spoonful of tiki butter, you know, add the same richness and the same kind of, you know, whatever. And then it doesn't taste like milk, because sometimes milk will, that's all you can taste if it overpowers, you know. And so it was like a clever way to try to combat that whole idea. And man, the tiki butter, still, if you get it on something, like, it's done, you know. We had to switch one of the things we learned.
Yeah, they keep the container separate from all the dishes they're doing until it's like
we had to come up with a system in the dish pit.
It's like one bad attitude. You can't let it be the other ingredients.
You can't.
It's gonna mess with the other ingredients.
Well, you know, our experience is in a bar. And in a bar, we have like these packets of things that we put in the three sink, right? And like we got a packet of sudsless glass cleaner in the first one, and then you put sanitizer in the last one. Well, that stuff wasn't strong enough to get through the butter, and so we had to start using like Dawn, you know, and like actually like you
like
know,
actually walk
yeah, yeah get the grease
get
out
scrub
yeah, yeah you know so yeah so that was one of the things we had to learn, you know, and we had to figure out in the beginning because we were starting to get tools back and they'd be oily. You know, I was like, that's not,
that
can't
no
work
good.
Like this.
Well, and I would imagine if there's some sort of residue, there's possibly some of that flavor that's going to mm-hmm. impact the other cocktails.
Yeah, and whatever else.
Yeah.
You know, whatever else we're growing here. And then I worked a lot of shifts, and I can't work like that. I can't work in mess. I can't work when it's dirty. I have to clean it. You know, and so when that stuff starts happening, I'll have like a mental breakdown and like, we got to fix this right now, you know.
In the middle of stop service, we need to fix
totally.
This.
Oh, I'm sure the bartenders think I'm crazy all the time. It's like, sometimes you just got to tell guests that you can't serve them and you got to clean, you know. You know, sometimes you just got to tell them that, like, look, I can't help you right now. I gotta clean this up.
Stop talking,
you know,
while I'm cleaning.
Right?
It's getting.
I know you didn't sign a contract when you came in, but we have an unwritten contract that I would keep this clean for your own health.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I gotta clean. But luckily they don't do that. That's only me when I work shifts. I gotta clean my mats.
You know? Yeah, there's something in the rail. Uh-huh. Gotta clean it. Yep. Get it out of there.
I gotta put everything back
in its
place.
It's best that we don't work shifts.
Yeah. We have this thing in the restaurant business called mise en place, and that's one of the things that we try to practice. It's a lifestyle. And man, being in the restaurant business for so long, like, I do it at home. I organize stuff. I put things, like, in a certain place. But mise en place is everything in its place, and, like, that's so important to a quick shift. Because if you're not putting stuff back and you're not cleaning things and you're not keeping, you know, everything straight, like you're in chaos the whole time and you can't, you know, we're like mindless robots that are just going.
Well, and if your rail's all messed up and mm-hmm. you're reaching for something that's usually there, but.
Where every time you put a glass down, it splashes you in the face. Like, that's just like, I can't work like that because it just bothers me. I don't want to be cleaning my face off just because there's a little bit of melted ice in the mat, you know, so I gotta fix all that kind of stuff. So
learning a lot about you.
Yeah. You know, I have a addiction to perfection. I figured out that as the older I got, I figured out that was one of my problems, and I know I can't achieve that, so I have to like fight and be like, okay, just let it go. But man, all of a sudden I'll wake up in the middle and be like, oh shit, like I'm overwhelmed and things aren't perfect. And it'll just, it'll destroy me in the middle of a shift. So, but yeah, that's what it's like back there. And that's what it takes to be like a bartender.
Yeah.
Is you have to be real sensitive to everything.
There's a lot to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's.
When we first started, she used to laugh because she's a cook. And, like, I'm a bartender, and, like, cooks, their jobs are very hard. Our jobs are, we're having fun, you know, and sometimes we're making drinks and taking shots, you know. And so, like, a cook sees a bartender, like, out there, and they're like, look at these, you know, sons of bitches out there having a good time. And I'm, like, burnt and cut, you know, it's 100 degrees back here. And so when she first started bartending, she was like, man, now I understand, like, how hard it is because we're cooking, but there's people watching us.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to be nice to them.
Yeah.
You know,
in
like,
the kitchen, I don't give a shit. Yeah.
No.
When you're
and you
busy,
you can be rude to everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's, you know, when
really
you're stressed and you're
yeah.
busy and you're trying to do stuff fast, a lot of the times the best attitude is to get a little aggressive, you know, because you can keep your head down and you move fast and you know, and you get serious, you know, and a lot of times people that are coming here to not be serious don't understand why you're being serious. You know, and like, you're just like, hey, man, I'm just trying to make, I got 10 drinks in front of me. I'm trying to make all these drinks.
Yeah, I'm in the weeds.
You know?
Like, and I'm trying to make sure you're having a good time.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. And they want to talk about an ingredient and they want to talk about some drink they had while they were in Fiji, you know? And you're like, I don't know how to make a drink from Fiji, you know? But you have to like go with them, you know? Like, oh, yeah, like, we make coconut daiquiris, you know? I'm not sure if it's going to be exactly like it was in Fiji, but we'll try to get as close as we can, you know? And why, at the same time, you're like, you know?
Doing 12 say, different things.
Yeah, like I said, I have a lot of boat analogies. But it's like you're whitewater rafting, but people are throwing shit at you. You know what I'm saying? So, that's in a busy true. Shift, it's kind of like that, you know? So you have to, like, get through it, you know? And being clean at the same time.
And keeping a clean workstation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, back to making 10, 12 drinks at once. I mean, so what is it like being behind the bar on the anniversary party?
Like, man, I can't so even it's kind of like riding a bike, but...
I would say everybody dreads it up to... Everybody's nervous about it up until... Because we've done it enough times, like, and everybody knows what to expect.
You know...
But, I mean, it seems like it's just getting bigger and bigger every year.
Yeah.
More and more people are turning out.
Yeah.
And the more mugs you order, the quicker they sell. It seems like.
Yeah, I know. That day's tough. There's a lot of, like, coming from me, there's a lot of, like, y'all better get your asses, you know, like, that kind of shit. Because, I mean, it's like, oh, my God. Especially when there's 25 people that have been here for 2 hours, you know, that are out front, like, beating the door down, waiting to get in. You know, it's like, man, we can't not be ready, you know, because if we're not ready and then we open the floodgates, man, we're done. Or we're going to be done for hours, you know, and we're going to spend 6 hours trying to get out from opening, you know, and getting out from underneath that, you know, and that's hard. That's a hard thing
to
do. And
you kind of never do on those days, so it's...
You got to stay in the weeds. Above it, you know, try to stay just enough ahead of it that
I'd say
you're
it's
not
all mental.
Getting crunched, you know. But you're behind the whole time, you know, and you're just you just
doing
go
the best you can, yeah. Yeah,
man. And for me, usually I don't bartend very often. I do it like once a month, sometimes more than that. So like those kind of shifts, I just do it. And, like, I have to get in a well and just start making drinks as fast as I can again, you know. And I haven't done it in, like, a month. So it's very trying and emotional and all those things, you know. So, but, yeah, those days are hard. Those are hard days.
Have you all considered maybe doing, like, a limited menu like you did yesterday just to alleviate that so you can make things go a little bit smoother?
Didn't we last year? We kinda...
No.
Because you
go, so check this out. 5 years is coming up. This is how I work. We had this joke that at 5 years we were going to serve every drink we've ever made. So no, we're not going to have an abbreviated menu. I don't know if that's going to. Those don't quote me on that. I don't know if that's actually going to happen, right? But we thought about it'd be cool to have like maybe serve the first menu,
yeah,
or something like that. You know, like our very first menu.
That would be fun.
But,
that would be awesome.
You know.
I mean, it's...
Minus the Pooh's Cafe.
Right, minus the Pooh's Cafe.
Yeah. What is that?
That is a layered liqueur drink that it's actually... it's really old school. It's from, like, the 1800s kind of Industrial Revolution kind of era of bartending. They would, you know, show their skills, and they'd pour it over spoons, and they would layer stuff, right? And so I always wanted to do a Pooh's Cafe. They used to make a Pooh's Cafe at my uncle's restaurant when I was a kid. And I remember they used to come out, and I always thought it was cool. You know, I was like 8 or whatever. And so I always wanted to make one when I opened a bar. And so it's stupid. It's the stupidest thing. We should have never done it. But we did it.
It was all liqueur.
We made it work. It had juice in it.
A little.
We made it work.
But does it taste good?
I don't know people.
It's more,
you know,
for what it...
It looks... It sounds like it's one of those things, like, it's just for show, but... You probably don't want to try it.
You know, and then so...
But people would, and they'd get hammered. It was so bad.
If you've ever looked at, like, a Jerry Thomas book or something like that that's from that era when they started making drinks like the Manhattan, a lot of their drinks were very small, you know, like an ounce and a half, you know, and so... That doesn't really translate to what we were doing. And then we didn't have glasses that were that small. And then it was easier to make the layers bigger than it was thinner. And so it grew because the bartenders kind of hated it.
And at one point, we were even using syringes to make it go faster.
The syringes to where they could, like... and then, so the key to a Pooh's Cafe is everything needs to be cold. Because it gets the density. And so they layer based on alcohol content. And so when it's colder, the alcohol molecules are closer together. And so they layer better, colder or whatever, you know. So we would preload syringes. And we had 3-ounce syringes, and they were supposed to measure out half an ounce with each. And they could just, like, push it in there. And so, you know, you're like, have a syringe. Everyone had to learn how to use a syringe. You know, and like,
yeah,
a syringe, you have to...
people sticking themselves on
it. It was too much work for not
to
pay
needles,
off.
Oh, but, okay. You know, like...
little plastic.
Yeah.
They'd been sitting in there overnight or whatever, or for a few hours, they would stick. You know, and like, not everyone knows you got to go backwards before you go forwards, you know. And so, like, they were, like, shooting it out, you know, and like, they were got bigger and bigger, you know. And so people would take them as shots because
it's
you're supposed
terrible.
To take it as a shot, mm-hmm. you know, back
but ours was
1870 or whatever, you know. And this is 1872. We had a lot less responsibility,
yeah.
you know, than we do now.
Also, it was like half the size.
And the top layer was 151, you know, because we needed something really high in alcohol. And then there was green chartreuse. That's like 90 proof or whatever.
So you'd have groups come in, and they would like all want them to take a shot. So it would take like 10 minutes to prep it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
then they would just, you know.
That was like all that work for one shot. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was on the menu.
It was expensive though.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to say
it was like $14
yeah.
or something.
Ooh,
we made it real expensive.
Oh yeah.
But people were still taking it. And then they would like, you know, oh, it's so good. It's so good. You know.
That's one of those where you're like, okay.
All right, I'll take your word for it. Yeah. I never had one, you know. I think I never took one. So I don't know. But that was, like I said, that was like, we learned a lot of things. And then, you know, they always say, like, young entrepreneurs or whatever, like, we don't know any better. And so we just take as many chances as we can. And if we knew better, we wouldn't take those chances, you know. But like I said, I had this memory of my uncle's restaurant, you know. They made Pooh's Cafes there. And so I was like, man, I want to put that on my menu. It's part of my career.
Yeah.
You know, because that's kind of where a lot of my inspiration comes from. And so we did it, you know. It lasted 6 months maybe before we changed it. That's like a driving force in changing the menu, is to get that damn drink off.
You know? Definitely.
We got to get that drink off the menu, you know. So.
So speaking of menus, anything cool on the new menu or anything really new that you've come up with?
I was going to say the Hampton Punch.
Yeah, there's some new drinks. Really cool ones.
It's my favorite one.
So we are starting to travel. And we're starting to get to go to some of these places, you know. We just got back from Jamaica, and we went to the Hampden Estate Distillery, and they served us a rum punch when we got there. And man, it was so good. It was so hot that day, you know. It was just nice to drink something, but it was so drastically different than any rum punch we'd been served at a distillery before. It had so much depth of flavor and everything, and like. I just couldn't.
We had to figure out what was in it.
I kept telling her. I was carrying around. I was like, I'd stop and be like, this is like the best thing I've ever had, you know?
And it was like room temperature with rum fire in it. So it was just, intense.
Rum fire, you know? So, but I couldn't forget about it. And so I started sending emails back to them like after we left. And I was like, I got to have the recipe. You know, and they never sent me a recipe because I'm sure they don't have, like, what we think of a recipe. They're just like, let's make some rum punch, you know. They know exactly what to do, you know. They don't need to measure stuff. They're not crazy like I am, you know. So they didn't have a recipe. They just gave me a list of ingredients. And so through trial and error, we just kind of tweaked it and made a syrup that's like a concentrate, which has hibiscus flowers in it. It's got strawberries. It's got cranberries in it. It's got all kinds of stuff. And it was like combining things that we kind of already did. Ginger to recreate that drink that we were served there. So that's on the menu, Hampden Estate Rum Punch. I have this new kind of the fog cutter is like a new obsession for me. And so I've been like playing around with different fog cutter recipes. So there's a new fog cutter that's on the menu that's really good. It's got scotch in it and Madeira instead of sherry.
Interesting.
It's really dynamic. Caitlin did a new mezcal drink. We got a new shark drink that's made with Chiranda, which is a in kind of local made rum from Mexico. It's made in Michoacán out of locally grown sugar cane. It's been made there, you know, some people even say they've been making sugar cane spirits in that area longer than they have in the Caribbean.
Wow.
So it's kind of new to Texas and new to the States. So it's combined with mezcal and wild fermented or pot stilled rum are such a, the fermentation flavors just kind of pop. And then it has fascinola in there, which has mango fermented flavors. So it's really like very dynamic. There's our menu's not as big as it was before because we wanted to, we have those Sip and Santa drinks. So it's like, we're going to have 8 more drinks. So
yeah.
We're a little bit smaller than usual, but that man, it's concentrated with, you know, really good. The custom drinks that are on there, like our own drinks are really, really good. You know, what else? Well, there's a Negroni on there. That's
Saturn,
made with
stirred Saturn.
Yeah, we took like the Saturn, like the juice drink,
mm-hmm.
and then we made it without juice. So it's got
No lemon.
Yeah, it's got grapefruit bitters for a little bit of acidity.
Okay.
It's made with a passion fruit liqueur, falernum. We're using kind of a softer gin from Holland, Geneva gin. It's stirred. It's really good. I like taking tiki drinks and trying to take the juice out and trying to make them like into stirred drinks. It's a like a exercise I do. David did that one. I didn't make that one, but we kind of talk. We go back and forth on making drinks like that. So he did a really good job with that. What else is on there that's new? Like I said, there's a Negroni. I have an affinity for the Negroni. And so this one is made with cachaça that tastes like cinnamon. And so it has very cinnamon and grapefruit kind of flavors. So we thought it would be cool, kind of like if Donna Beachcomber made a Negroni. So it's like Don's Beachcomber's Negroni.
Nice.
That also has Madeira in it, which has an overwhelming rum flavor. If you didn't know that about Madeira, it's really good with rum. You know, it has a really prominent brown sugar character that mixes really well with rum. You might not notice it on when it's on its own, but once you mix it with rum, it's like bam, you know, it pops out. So yeah, there's a new bowl. We got a new bowl vessel. It's called Danger in the Shallows. And then that's really it. And then Sip and Santa.
Yeah,
you know, we got all those Sip and Santa drinks.
And how long is that going to be running for?
Through December. Are we going to serve it the last week?
I think it's after Christmas. I think it's done by Christmas.
Kind of Christmas.
Okay.
Through December.
So people still have a time to get out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, they have the whole month, you know, up until Christmas.
I'm telling you, that Kana Kaloka Swizzle, that was my favorite.
Yeah.
Sip and Santa was good.
Yeah,
that was popular. A little brighter because of the lemon juice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that Swizzle.
Man, that was the most popular drink, and that's the easiest one to make.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know if you've seen the Beach Bum Barry did videos on all of them also.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. Uh-uh. He did videos where he shows himself making the drinks.
Oh. Oh, yeah, we did get those. We did get those. I did watch those.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, and it was funny because I was watching him make it yesterday. I'm like, okay, ounce of lime, ounce of the Swizzle syrup, 2 ounces of OFTD. And then the video, it was, yeah, that's all it was. But that chai, because I guess the Swizzle syrup is nutmeg syrup, chai and cinnamon.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Man, you got we're like sworn to secrecy. Where'd you get?
They're on the internet. I just searched for them. Yeah.
Yeah, we had to like sign paperwork. You know.
We didn't put it out there.
Right.
We didn't put it out.
Right?
No.
That was his, I didn't tell him anything. This is Russell Thede.
Yeah. Sorry, Jeff.
But
you,
no, it's
you,
fine.
You didn't make
it's
your
out
Vimeo,
there.
You didn't make your Vimeo account private.
Right? Yeah, totally.
But yeah, no, he's got all the recipes for
That's
all the
funny.
Drinks on there.
Oh, cool. Wow.
So, Yeah. Awesome. If you guys want to see them, they're there. But come to Laylo to try them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Come here first.
Right.
And then, you know, bang them at home. Because you got to have the vessel. You got to have the Santa pants.
Yes.
In order to have the drink
right.
properly. So come to Laylo, buy your Santa pants.
And our, you know, the real key to our drinks is that we have water filters. That's the real key to a bar. That's why everybody's like, man, I made this drink when I got home and it doesn't taste the same. Well, you're using ice from your fridge. Don't use ice from your fridge. Use, you know, distilled water, really nice ice to make drinks because you got flavors from your tap water.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the key to a bar. That's why our drinks are so much better. It's because we have water filters.
Or go hit up Chick-fil-A or Sonic, I guess.
They have water filters too.
Yeah, and they sell their ice.
Yeah.
They sell their nugget ice, so.
Yeah. That it saves our machines.
Yeah.
You know, so they have to have water filters on them. So
nice.
Yeah.
So a little extra background. Guys, thank you again so much for taking the time to hang out with us and talk to us. Thank you again yesterday for the hospitality and the great drinks.
Of course. Course.
Yeah, can't wait to see what you guys have in store for the next anniversary in March.
Man, it's gonna be I don't know.
It's so much. I think the first menu is a good idea. Just X out the.
I like that idea too.
The Poos Cafe.
You know, we'll probably make like a menu of mixed of different. We won't serve every drink.
History of Laylo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe pick out some favorites from that. I think.
And then maybe get rid of all the. Like the classic drinks, and just do like a menu of Laylo.
Yeah,
drinks.
Just do
like
your drinks.
Only drinks that we've done, like Fire at Aku Aku or something like that. I don't know. That seems like so far away from me, you know. But
gotta get through.
And then we got to see what the mug's gonna look like. What man, Mulder? I mean, he does everything. Just like he's like, bam, I'm done. You know, in like a week.
Have y'all already started talking about
it? No, man, he knocks it out like. A month ahead of time, and it's
amazing. We're having trouble narrowing down an idea for this year's month.
Yeah, we don't know yet, but we'll see.
It'll be a cool one.
A special
one,
yeah.
It's got to be
5 years worth. Yeah. You know.
Because that's a huge accomplishment, getting to 5 years. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys deserve it.
Came so
fast,
quick.
Yeah.
You know, I hope the next 5 years kind of slows down a little bit.
Not too much.
Not too much.
Yeah. Just enough. Just enough to allow you more trips to Jamaica.
Exactly.
Right.
Stuff like that. So.
Totally. Totally. We were just talking about that yesterday. We are already ready to go back.
I bet. Mm-hmm. I know. That's why we want to go on a cruise and go to Jamaica. You can go to Appleton, see that at least.
So. Yeah. That was really cool, too, man.
Appleton's really well put together.
Man, it's really cool. You leave a rum expert when you leave Appleton.
Nice.
You
know?
They have a lot of original equipment and little...
Yeah,
space is really set up for education. It's very cool. Yeah.
Did you get to meet Joy out there?
No, we didn't. Uh-uh.
But
it was funny.
Somebody's coming here.
The David Morrison's coming here this Thursday, the 29th. So the week we were in Jamaica, they were all here in Houston. And so, totally. You know, and they like emailed me and were like, oh, you know, a lot of the Jamaicans are going to be here from Appleton, you know. Would y'all want to do something? Like, man, we're actually signed up for the tour that day in Jamaica, you know. And so we missed out on them being here last time. But he's going to be here. I don't know what he's here for. He's here for something else. But he happens to, you know, want to come by here. So, man, I'm really excited about it. I'm really looking forward to his visit. I have so many questions for him. Just like, I have more reggae questions probably than I do like rum questions.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited about it. It's going to be really cool.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
And any other events you have upcoming for the rum club?
Not yet. I'm working on Man Sippin' Santa and changing the menu and everything else. Halloween. You know, everything's been kind of keeping me from doing rum club stuff. I want to do a class on stills, not real technical, just kind of get people to where they can wrap their head around what a still is and how important it is to rum. And I want to do that kind of in January. I don't have much planned right now, but we'll definitely, after the first of the year, we'll start picking back up and doing some more fun little things. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, keep an eye out on the Laylo Facebook group for the rum club.
That's right.
Events.
Lay low, Land Lovers Rum Club.
There we go. Follow these guys on Instagram if you already are not. You probably should have been for a long time.
Yeah.
Can also keep up with the events for the Sippin' Santa.
Especially social media for sure. There's a Sippin' Santa. I think Sippin' Santa Beach Bum Berries presents Sippin' Santa at Lay Low. Its own page that you can check out on Facebook. That'll have kind of news and pictures and things like that, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot going on.
Awesome. Well, we won't take up any more of your time. Again, thank you guys so much. And
yeah,
until
thank you.
Next time, Akole Maluna, y'all. Normally, I'd just let the music play the episode out, but I didn't mention any of the marooned links. It's been a little while, and I'm a little rusty at this. I also couldn't let y'all go without thanking Dallas's premier exotica band, the Tiki Torches, for providing the music. Go give them a like on Facebook and follow them on Instagram. And if you want to keep up with the podcast, go join the Maroon Facebook group. And of course, if you'd like to follow my tiki travels, go follow me on Instagram at DavidFantomatic. Our next stop is to San Diego in late December. As always, the links will be in the show notes. So until next time, Akole Maluna, and enjoy the tunes, y'all.